to make it. But bread has basically four ingredients. There's flour, water, yeast, and salt. And a lot of other things could be added to affect taste, texture, and nutrition, but those four are the basics. So we start with warm water. All life requires water. It needs to be warm enough to wake up the yeast, but not too warm, because the yeast is delicate, and it'll die quickly when it gets too warm. The amount of water varies a lot in bread recipes and has consequences in the final type of loaf, its softness, crustiness, and how hard it is to knead. And yeast. Uniform, dependable, granulated yeast is a new innovation. But it's the same yeast that's been used for millennia. If you don't have yeast, you can make a flour and water soup and leave it open in a warm place, and it will capture wild yeast, which floats around in the air everywhere. This is the source for sourdough. And flour. We're using half bread flour and half whole wheat flour. Bread flour is made from high-protein wheat, which means it has a lot of available gluten, and gluten makes bread chewy and elastic. What you don't want is soft wheat flour or pastry flour, which has less gluten and more starch. And so it's better for cakes and pastries that need to have very tender, soft textures. Good unbleached bread flour actually has more protein than whole wheat soft flour. All-purpose flour is a mixture of the two types, and it's okay for both purposes, but not the best for either. Now, gluten is the protein in the wheat. It's wonderful, sticky, gooey stuff. And there are people who can't tolerate it. I am most grateful to not be among them. It is also out of fashion in some food circles at the moment. But I haven't myself seen much scientific support for the idea that it's bad for everyone. And so people have evolved eating it for many thousand years. So we still see it as being wholesome and good. So today, we're also adding oil to make the texture smoother, and milk, which we already added, which makes it last longer, adds protein, and improves the texture. And then we'll add some sugar or honey. The book says to add the salt last. So we add sugar or honey or a little bit of molasses. And that makes it last. That gives the yeast food to grow with and makes the bread bubbly. And last of all, we add salt. What does that do? It keeps all this exuberance under some sort of control. It toughens up the gluten to make it chewier, and it enhances the flavor of everything. As you stir the flour in water, it releases gluten, and the more you mix it, the more gluten is activated. This is why you only stir some flour-based recipes like pie dough until they're barely moistened, and some others for a few minutes, and others you beat or knead for quite a long time. So for a few thousand years now, grain has been nurtured, harvested, and stored by human beings in most of the world. In the Americas, it was mostly corn. In Asia, mostly rice. But in the Middle East and spreading out from there through Europe and North Africa, the most important grain was wheat. A large part of the reason Mesopotamia was the cradle of Western civilization. It is there that wild wheat and barley grew plentifully. Archaeologists who try these sorts of things have found that you can harvest about 2 pounds per hour using a flint sickle, which would make for a pretty good work to nutrient ratio. Hunter-gatherers found it was worthwhile to settle in areas where the grain grew well and eventually learned how to help it grow. Okay, now we've got this lovely sticky mess. Let's pass some of that around so you can have a true bread experience here.
Because why should we have all the fun? Is that, I already did that.
almost inevitable, because suitable wild yeast was native to the same areas as wild wheat, and any unprotected combination of wheat and water will naturally be infected with yeast from the air and begin to bubble and foam. So bread probably just happened, and probably it just happened long before written language. The first bread that we know of was made just after the Ice Age, over 10,000 years ago. It was a coarse, heavy cake of pounded mixed grain. And people eventually figured out that risen bread was easier to chew and tastier. And what they didn't know was that it also has more available nutrition. We know that it and its natural companion, beer, were documented in Egyptian records before 4000 BCE. Bread was the primary food in most European and Middle Eastern history. Peasants rarely ate meat or vegetables. They ate heavy, coarse bread of pounded or coarsely milled grain and various other ingredients, and bread was their main meal almost all the time. When Christians pray, "Give us this day our daily bread," bread symbolizes all of existence. This has eventually extended in American English to bread or dough as synonyms for cash. Okay, round two. Bread in religion.
Osiris, the ancient Egyptian deity who personified the life cycle of grain, was worshipped on the day that grain was planted. The death of the grain and the death of the god were one and the same. The cereal was identified with the god who came from heaven. He was the bread by which man lives. The resurrection of the god symbolized the rebirth of the grain. The Romans sprinkled animal sacrifices with grain before killing to symbolize fertility and plenty. The custom survives in the throwing of rice or seeds at a bride. Over time, the Romans began to bake bread into the shape of animals to substitute for real animal sacrifices. Vesta was the goddess of the hearth and the great mother. Her symbolism included the oven representing a womb, hence the idea of having, say it with me, a bun in the oven. Jews ate unleavened matzos to commemorate their precipitous flight from Egypt. Some historians have suggested that the importance of its being unleavened also had to do with the association of the yeasty swelling, growing loaf with pregnancy and therefore female power. The Aztecs annually ate the body of their fertility god, Huitzilopochtli, in the form of corn cakes baked in his image. Many agricultural festivals survived within Christianity. Because they were so important to people, the church couldn't completely eradicate them, but it did absorb them and adjusted their means. There was a tradition in Wales and parts of England of sin eating. This was distributing special bread at funerals to the poor, who by eating it took on the sins of the deceased. Doesn't sound very sporty. In most human cultures that practice cannibalism, there was a strong belief that the eater takes on the characteristics of the eaten. So those who were eaten were those who were brave or holy, or in some other ways, admired or emulated. It is a short step from this to symbolic cannibalism, using bread instead of people. Consider the ritual surrounding the Christian Eucharist, where bread and wine are mystically transformed into the flesh and blood of Christ and then eaten. In our opening words, Emily Dickinson acknowledged an integral philosophical connection among nature, bread, and the Eucharist. And just when you thought the participation was about to end, Nancy has been taming this loaf far better than I was. plasticity that says that the bread is pretty much almost ready to go into an oven.
By the end of 10 minutes of kneading, the dough changes from a sticky, lumpy mess into a smooth, elastic, sweet-smelling unit. Then you let it rise, and you punch it down, and you let it rest, and you make it into loaves, and then let it rise again. You also have to learn to feel when the dough has risen enough to punch down, and when the loaves have risen enough to go into the oven. The instructions say, when it has doubled in size. But when you have a nice brown loaf, it's really hard to tell when it's doubled. And the time that it takes varies with room temperature, water temperature you used for mixing the dough, and several other, how much salt, and several other variants. And so you need to be able to poke it with your finger to feel when is the right time. If you put it in too soon, it splits and doesn't cook in the middle. If you wait too long, then it gets dry inside and it might collapse in on itself. So making bread is a passed down tradition, and one that was seriously interrupted by the Industrial Revolution. The whiteness of bread has always been a political issue. It's true. The Romans, who first invented milling, noticed that the finer wheat was ground, the lighter its color. And so very light flour in Roman times was flour that had been ground many times, and so it was labor intensive and very expensive. Almost immediately, dishonest millers learned to add various cheaper ingredients to stretch it and make it look whiter. With the Industrial Revolution came the ability to separate the germ and bran from flour, therefore making it much whiter. And wealthy people bought bakery white bread made from factory ground flour, while lower classes ate cheaper whole wheat bread. Since more and more women worked outside the home, more families ate purchased bread, which contained adulterants. By the 19th century, the list of common adulterants included ashes, powdered bone, plaster of Paris, magnesium carbonate, pipe clay, alum, and chalk.
So eventually bread or anything else made at home began to be seen as purer and more healthful for good reason, as we just noted. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, people who could afford to spend time and money on their health began to look for cures for what ailed them. And a whole string of health cures sprung up to bring the various takes on healthful living and virtuous eating. In Scotland, Dr. Graham, a dour Presbyterian abolitionist, noticed that yeast was associated with alcohol. So it must be bad. His followers ate only unleavened whole grain bread that was heavy, coarse, and without salt. It was also without taste, and never caught on except for the Graham cracker, which was originally sold as a health food. And I'm gonna add a footnote to this too. One of the reasons why the Graham cracker was invented was to allay the lascivious nature of women. Now, I don't know about you ladies, but if I lost my lascivious nature, that would be a third of my personality. That was a solution in search of a problem that didn't exist. In the United States, Dr. Kellogg espoused a similarly strict and deprivational diet, which he sold to wealthy patients along with electric baths, sounds like a bad thing, and strenuous physical regimens at his private spa in Michigan. The primary survival from his experiment was the invention of cornflakes. More recently, we've seen a great revival in artisanal breads. And we've had access recently to an amazing breadth of variety of non-industrial types and flavors of bread. More people are making bread at home, and more purchased bread is made in small bakeries where it may be kneaded by machine, but it's mixed, proofed, and made into loaves by human beings. So bread is a part of us, literally, figuratively, and symbolically. It is pleasure, it is sustenance, and it's down-home magic. We hope we've made you consider it more broadly and piqued your curiosity and your appetite for it. And as the cookbook advises, now we let it rest. Since that one doesn't lead to deep contemplation, are there any responses?
Yesterday, when I went to the farmer's market, I went to the Bear Mountain Vegas table. And instead of it being laden with bread, there were flowers on the table and a note from Chris that Ray Powers had died yesterday. Ray made wonderful sourdough bread in a brick oven in his home for years and delivered it all over our community, and we will miss him a lot. On another note, if you are a sourdough fan like I am, The Ultimate was written by Michael Pollan not too long ago in his book called Cooking, where he pursued the best sourdough in the world. So it's good reading.
So I'm feeling, after watching this wonderful production, I'm feeling like sacrilegious, guilty, blasphemous because I use a bread machine.
We still like you.
The song and offering caused me to think about the nature of shortened bread. I don't know if anybody knows. Is it like fry bread?
Yeah. Actually, yeah, it is. It's a type of fry bread. And I guess it's closer to being like a shortcake than leavened bread. I think it has a little bit of leavening in it. It's not really a yeast bread, but I like the Andrew sisters.
You cut the shortening, but you don't. Do you fry it then?
I think it is a fried bread.
They talk about the skillet, and they talk about the kids being almost dead, and the doctor says get some shortening bread in them. And it really, like, I know that it wasn't written on the reservation, but you know what I mean?
Right.
I noticed a parallel there that's
right.
Interesting.
Right, it is. It's very interesting.
That's the medicine.
Yeah.
That's what you got to.
I like rye bread, but I've noticed that I'm eating a lot of healthy bread that goes into the bakery, and I make the best bread out. And it may be expensive, not make money, but the good tasting bread is better than sex.
I wasn't going to say
by Yvonne.
case about graham crackers and lascivious. Explain a little bit more of that. What's the connection?
My explanation is Dr. Graham didn't drink.
Some really isolated village in the Alps that couldn't keep yeast or sourdough going because they didn't bake often enough. And what they would do, they'd bake a whole bunch of bread, I think it was in the fall, and then they'd hang it up from the ceiling like sausages to dry out. And the rest of the year, what they would do is put the thing essentially through a meat grinder and have sort of a cold cereal. And somebody with really inventive mind could make some theological parallel out of that, but I can't.
I've always been confused about yeast and how do they get it to be so plenty.
It's natural.
Yeah, but
how they make yeast? Well, they grow it. And they have big vats of flour and
bacteria.
It's yeast. Yeast is a kind of organism. So you know, there's bacteria, there's fungus, and there's yeast. And there are hundreds of kinds of yeast. And a lot of them work for bread.
Now, did I catch what you said correctly, that grain was sprinkled on animal sacrifices, and a vestige of that is in sprinkling rice on people when they get married?
Actually, you know, I think that, yes, you did hear me say that, but I think also the throwing the grain really is more about fertility of the bride.
Ah.
It is the top two, the animals representing the fecundity of the earth, and that the grain was thrown on to represent the fecundity, and so that's still the
I was feeling very good about never having been sacrificed in marriage.
Have you ever read the movie of the brothers?
I haven't seen the movie, but I have read the book. Yeah.